Well, do we have a treat in store for you today, listeners?
As much of a treat as it was on the 16th of July 2009 when it originally came out. Answer me this. 100!
Which means this episode is, almost exactly 8 years old now.
Yes, Facebook Memories has been throwing up pictures to me recently of us wearing capes with our initials on the back in gold. We had those. Oh, we should explain. Our 100th episode was a live show.
It was.
I think we should put up some photos at facebook.com/answermethis.
It's never too late to enjoy those pictures.
We had 100 listeners there because it was the 100th episode, and it was at the Roundhouse in Chalk Farm in London as part of the iTunes Festival. The big headline act of the night was LaRue because it is a music festival. And in 2009, LaRue was the great big electropop new hope.
Do you know, I still love a bit of LaRue.
So on stage, we had a live band formed of Martin the Soundman, our friend Racton, who was playing a little drum machine and bass. We had Josie Long and our friends Alex and Tommy to do little interstitials. And Tommy had broken up with his long-term girlfriend that morning.
I'd forgotten that detail.
He came to stay in the Heartbreak spare room at the old AMT Towers for a few weeks after that. I'd forgotten so much of this episode. I'd forgotten that we had the 1,000th question during it.
Yeah, I'd totally forgotten that we had the origin story of Answer Me This set to music.
And all these years later, you still have a Filofax.
Yes, I've upgraded mine recently to a stitched purple leather job from John Lewis. It's very nice, and I'm still a fan.
You're a Filofan.
If the folks from Filofax are listening and they need a smooth voiceover for their future marketing campaign, remember me.
Hey, do you want a calendar where the battery never runs out?
Exactly. Actually, the other thing that I enjoyed was the reference to the Bunker Bar.
Yes.
The name of the bar where we came up with the title for Answer Me This. I'd literally never thought about that. Until today, when I was listening back to Answer Me This 100, which you're about to hear. But last night, I was there with Martin.
And yet not the Bunker Bar, because that shut down ages ago.
Yeah, it's now a sort of Japanese-Korean fusion restaurant called Flesh and Buns.
So purely by coincidence, this
purely.
Week, you went back to the Bunker Bar basement.
Where it all began.
We're still going, but Bunker Bar isn't.
Exactly, who'd have guessed that turn of events?
At the start, I found this painful to listen to myself, because I think I've become much better at stage performance now. Which you can hear on the current Bugle episodes. Those were recorded live in front of an audience, including my parents, who enjoyed it. While Mum enjoyed it, Dad was speechless afterwards, but not in a particularly dramatic way. I think he just couldn't be bothered to open his mouth and say anything. But then I really got into it. I loved the songs very much. Questions from the Future, that's still a banger, isn't it?
Yeah, as is the Martin the Soundman song. I mean, actually hauntingly beautiful. I think you can also still hear the enthusiasm of the audience. I mean, there's no reason why you shouldn't, of course, because it's the same recording that we put out 8 years ago. Nothing's changed. And it was an accurate capturing of that enthusiasm.
And we did give them party whistles.
Yeah, having 100 people blowing party whistles directly in your face was completely overwhelming and actually sort of strangely emotional, because we'd been doing this thing in your house without contact with the public directly. And I think Martin says, doesn't he, I've never heard a sound like that before, is the thing that he says. But it really was like that. I just, when it happened, I was like, wow, this is one of those moments that's going straight into my memory bank. I'm always going to remember being on stage and hearing that noise. I've never heard that noise before. And it's the noise of people who really love our show and love to be part of it.
But I think that is still the case when you do a live podcast event. People are used to listening to podcasts by themselves. So to be in the room with other people that like the same thing or who make the same thing is pretty jolly. Doesn't happen all that often.
And actually, if you want to go and see Helen doing Allusionist live, that's happening, isn't it?
That is happening in September at the London Podcast Festival. I think on the 16th at 2 p.m. Martin's also doing Song by Song.
Right.
And I'm on that with John Hodgman. Tickets are available now if you search for London Podcast Festival. I don't think I'm going to give people party whistles.
No, well, we've done it now, haven't we?
If you want to get any of our other retro Answer Me Thises, they are for sale at answermethisstore.com, which Ollie Mann built using Squarespace, who
he
have sponsored this
did.
Retro episode of Answer Me This.
Yeah, and Squarespace have actually just unveiled dozens of new templates that you can play with.
Ooh.
So even if you've already got an existing Squarespace website, now is the time to dive back in and play with it and make it even better and tinker, because there's some great tinkering you can do now.
Get yourself a new hairdo, but website equivalent.
So what I did on my own site, ollieman.com, is I put a caption bubble in front of my photo. So it didn't have to be a caption underneath anymore. It can be like a kind of cool layered effect, that kind of thing.
That sounds fun.
Head on down to squarespace.com. You get a free 14-day trial. And then if you want to go ahead and use their easy templates to design a really great website,
you can get a 10% discount on a year's worth of Squarespace if you use our code
ANSWER. Thank you very much to them for supporting this episode. I think you're going to enjoy this. It is different to a usual episode, but it's one that any true Answer Me This fan should have heard.
Yes, and if not, you're about to become a true Answer Me This fan by hearing it. We'll be back with a fresh new Answer Me This on the first Thursday of August.
Okay, let's go. It's my party, can I cry if I want to? La Rue, a tribute act to Danny La Rue.
Answer me this, answer me this.
Why is it called Chalk Farm when there's no chalks or farms?
Answer me this, answer me this.
Why is it called a roundhouse when it isn't a house?
Answer me this, answer me this.
Now we've reached 100, is it time to grow up?
Answer me this, answer me this.
Wow.
Good afternoon.
I've never heard a sound like that before.
And welcome to the Answer... This feels like a moot point now, but anyway. Welcome to the Answer Me This 100th episode. Wow. Yeah, we should audio describe for the listeners at home what's happening here.
Yeah, well, a Sonne Lumiere display,
yeah.
Fireworks.
Helen and I flew in on wires, especially designed for us by Cirque du Soleil. We should say who else is here for the benefit of the listeners at home.
Yeah.
Only Martin, the fucking sound man, is here. But not only Martin the Soundman.
No, some names that might be familiar to regular listeners of the podcast. Nathan the Work Experience is here. Back from episode 14. Who'd have thought he'd make it this far?
We are, can I believe it, but Mark from Essex is in the room.
Etc. Do we have Andy from Essex in the room? Hey!
And so pleased you found the time in your busy schedule of emailing us constantly. Thank you for coming.
And unfortunately, someone isn't with us tonight. Lindsay from London emailed yesterday saying, sorry, I can't come after all. I've got swine flu. Aww.
It's so genuinely true.
After three, let's do... oh, that sounds nasty. So one, two, three.
Ooh, that sounds nasty.
God, this suddenly just felt like Butlins just then.
That's what I've always wanted, Ollie.
Let's get a sense for the kind of crowd we've got here, Helen.
Yeah.
Perhaps you'd like to blow your party whistle if you are related to me by blood.
You weren't expecting all of those, were you, Ollie?
I've got to have a chat with you, Dad. That holiday to France, seriously.
And blow your party whistles if you're wearing any Answer Me This merchandise. Cha-ching!
That's quite a lot.
Thank you. Perhaps blow your whistle if you secretly fancy Martin the Soundman.
Can I have a whistle blow for people who openly fancy Martin the Soundman?
Good luck to you,
just,
Martin.
Just one.
And a business card as well, preferably.
What are you suggesting?
and please blow your whistles with joy if you think it's funny that Helen can't pronounce the word penguin.
I can pronounce it. You act like I'm not capable. I'm okay. Just ahead of you because this is eye mutation in action, Ollie.
Okay.
100 years' time, you'll all be saying it if you were alive.
We'd also like to introduce our special guests, Tommy Herbert, Alex Thomas and Josie Long.
You'll be hearing from them later, and the audience at home can play Guess Which Is Which.
Yeah.
Exciting game. Also, out in the audience, we've got our special question correspondent, Matthew Crosby. How are things out in the field?
It is. It's hot. It's sweaty.
Yeah.
It's exactly what you would think a room full of nerds would be like.
Very harsh. He's a horrible man, isn't he? Horrible.
All I'm saying is we can smell our own.
Are we ready to take some questions?
Oh, I'm born ready.
The first question comes from Gavin Wright from Harold Wood.
Hello.
Hello, Gavin.
What's the strangest thing you've ever celebrated?
A good question indeed.
Well done, Gavin Wright.
For me, I would have to say the strangest thing I've ever celebrated was making an old woman cry.
Congratulations. What was the occasion and how did you choose to commemorate it?
You're right to ask those two very specific questions, Helen.
Thanks.
Yeah, because usually I only celebrate killing old women or bringing them to orgasm, but this time...
Ollie's parents are in the room, everyone. Woo! They've been so proud.
What it was is I worked in TV. That's what I used to do. It was a confession for you. That's one of the dark secrets of my past, working in television. You knew it really, didn't you? You knew there was something up. And I was working on a show about the Blitz. And it being ITV, they wanted, like, emotional stories. So on the phone, I was trying to get all the contributors to cry. And I did quite well on the phone.
You're weird.
And then when in practice, when we were filming, no one was crying, Helen.
What a bunch of fuckers.
Exactly. But then one day, there was a lady called Iris, I remember. I take no pride in this, it's just the honest
Iris
answer to the question.
Is Iris in tonight? Anybody?
I was talking to Iris, and she was talking about the Dead End Kids. She was getting very romantic about the Dead End Kids, which was this group of sort of, I suppose it's like vigilantes, really, who did mad things like took a live bomb and threw it in the Thames and stuff like that. And as she was talking, I didn't expect it to be something that would make her cry, but as she was talking, her lips started trembling, and I was the researcher, I was asking the questions.
Like, this is gold,
and the
trembling.
It's just like, oh, yes. And we did. We went and celebrated that evening in the pub, making an old woman cry. Didn't have Spitfire. That would have seemed wrong. Or Bombardier.
Actually, one of the weirdest things I've ever celebrated involved Alex, who's sitting next to me on the stage here, just waiting to do some vocal artistry. Alex, would you mind telling the audience precisely what you did on the 26th of October, 2003?
Maybe pick the most significant moment, if you can remember.
And nothing before 2 p.m, basically.
I had salmon for lunch, I remember that.
Did we?
I did, yeah. I fell off a rope swing in Tunbridge Wells and I dislocated my hip.
No. And after that, he had to spend a month in traction in hospital and then, 2 months just lying in bed?
It was excruciatingly painful. It was the closest I've come to experiencing the pain of giving birth.
Yet.
Who knows what this evening will hold? But a year later, we thought it apt to have a nice celebratory evening on the 26th of October 2004, and I made a chocolate cake with the outline of a dislocated hip in white chocolate buttons.
Did you say hip hip hooray?
We did not.
I don't think we did. What a trick we missed. What were we thinking? We're probably thinking you might have to have a hip replacement before your time.
Hard to be fun about that, isn't it?
Yeah. Woo! I hope that answers your question, Gavin.
Yes. Who's next, Matthew?
It's Naomi Stokes from Kent.
My husband is very, very obsessed with your show, and I worry that he may love you more than me.
It's possible. So, we're very lovable.
Answer me this. If I win this, should I give him my second ticket?
And who did you give your second ticket to, Naomi?
I brought him along.
Yay! Yay!
He had to bribe me. I'm going for dinner.
Yay! Oh,
can we speak to him? Does he talk? Yeah. Hello. What's your name, Mr. Stokes?
It's Tim.
Tim, hello, Tim.
Tim
Welcome.
Stokes is in the house. Very good.
I'm curious, you know, how your obsession manifests itself.
He's bought the flat next door to yours. And he's drilling holes. It's going well, though, isn't it, Tim Stokes?
How do you engage with our show?
Oh, well, you know, I couldn't actually tell you the contents of my dreams. And
it's good, because talking about your dreams can get boring. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
But is it a case that Naomi can't come in the room when you're listening? You're like, no, shh, Ollie's telling a story about wanking, shh.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, it's great to meet fans like you, Tim Stokes. Thank you for coming. Thank you, Naomi.
Thank you.
Because, you know, we've never really met you guys before and had you all in a room, and it's a very strange experience for us. Most of the fans of the show when we started were friends and family, really, and people we're forcing to listen.
There were a couple of people who found us by accident and seemed to be really confused and cross. I remember in the first episode, we got a question from a woman none of us knew, and it was about dialing codes, and she just seemed furious.
Oh, yeah.
We had some children fans at the beginning as well, because one of the things I said to Helen...
Go forth and groom them on MySpace.
Groom some children.
Anyone with more than one X in their name, they're fair game. Can I just say, I've spotted a man with an egg in the front row. What have you got an egg for, pray?
It's not a real egg.
He's putting the egg to the microphone. I was asking you to speak into the microphone.
But it sounds like a real egg.
It's just a fake egg.
It's just a fake egg. That makes perfect sense. Thank you for clarifying. Okay.
The fake egg really wanted to come, and it didn't win in the ticket draw itself.
Anyway, but many of you, I expect, will be wondering, what did we do to come up with this brilliant idea for a show in the first place? We're going to sort of explain that for you now using drama. Yeah.
Ooh.
That's right.
Oh,
Yeah. Brecht would be proud.
It's not going to be modernist, though. It might be enjoyable. Yeah. So don't worry on that score.
So here we are. We're going to be joined by Josie, Alex and Tommy again, who are going to help us explain how the podcast came about. We're going to take you back in time to a party, actually. Very much like this one, I suppose.
Yeah.
Except it wasn't at all like this one in that it wasn't sponsored by a massive American conglomerate.
But, everyone didn't have to leave by 7:30 to go to the bigger party upstairs. And also I knew everyone there because it was in my house. Just
otherwise exactly the same.
Yeah, very similar.
As this party.
We like to party. We like to party. We like to party. We like to party.
Helen, I need to talk to you alone.
As you can imagine, I was reluctant. We have all heard the rumours.
Helen, you know when we were students, we both really wanted radio shows, but now that we're adults in the working world, no one seems inclined to give us one.
Yeah?
I think I found the solution.
Oh, no, not another siege on Capital FM. Last time we lost all our men.
No need for bloodshed this time, Helen. We can use the internet.
The internet? But that's the refuge of weirdos and nerds.
It won't be in a few years' time, Helen. Think of Barack Obama and all the other web celebrities that haven't been invented yet.
It sounds like a plan, Ollie, but how?
Let's do a podcast.
We weren't to know it yet, but at that moment, our lives were to change forever. Or at least for the next 2.5 years. We're not sure how long the podcast is going to run.
I have to say, having seen that performance, if that turns out to be the pivotal moment of my life, I'm going to die an unhappy man.
You probably will anyway.
But podcasts were still quite new. They were this exciting emerging technology and we had a lot to learn.
And we're better to learn about the constantly shifting, innovating world of the internet than from books.
That's right. Yeah.
Make sure your podcast is listed on Podcast Pickle and Alta Vista, or nobody will ever find it.
Then maybe one day we'll get to do the Podcast Pickle Festival.
Talk about your genitals as much as is possible.
I have to write this down.
These books are invaluable.
But despite all this brilliant advice, we'd never recorded any sound before. I mean, the only time I'd ever recorded sound was to tape my neighbours boffing.
Luckily, 5 years before, I'd had the foresight to hitch my wagon to a man with a home recording studio. But enough of my relationship with Prince.
Oh!
It was shortly afterwards I got together with Martin the Soundman.
Let's meet him, everybody, in this exciting drama.
You're a big ball. I'm going to stick my dick right in it.
With his sophisticated wit, rugged good looks and scientific know-how, it was clear that Martin was going to be an integral part of the podcast from the very beginning.
Yeah, but we didn't even know what the podcast was going to be yet, did we? So we had to decide on a name. And this is genuinely true. Helen and I went to the Bunker Bar in Covent Garden because I always like to channel Hitler when I'm brainstorming. And we came up with this genuine list of possible names for the podcast. These are transcribed directly from our filofaxes.
I don't have a filofax. I just had a normal person's notebook because it was 2006.
I had a filofax. Helen was writing on the back of Take a Break or something.
They can't because there are puzzles all over that. There's no room. But the problem is, this is the genuine list. With the bad ones taken out, so what you've got is the best ones. And basically, I want to die of shame just reading them.
Helen, how about this as a possible name for the podcast? The Boobs.
Brilliant, it's brilliant. But what about, as a possible hit podcast, The Squits?
Sophisticated, I like what you're doing. But how about this, Helen? Dream further.
Okay.
Jizz Hands.
It's clever, I like it. I'm going to run with that theme and I'm going to suggest All That Jizz. It's a winner.
I genuinely still do think that's a good name for a show. Man.
This is never going to work.
How about this one? This was Helen's. I'm sorry, I haven't a job.
This was just a germ of an idea. Something to do with awful.
That was written in the final fact. Something to do with awful. That'll do.
Along with, have some ideas.
But the real winner...
Jimmy Cranky's cunt.
I just love the idea that somewhere in a parallel universe, Steve Wright, on a monthly basis, is saying, later Ronan Keating, some factoids, and we'll be joined by Helen and Ollie from Jimmy Cranky's cunt.
Thank fuck our friend Tim was to save us from this terrible fate with some well-timed advice.
I've got someone to tell you about the internet. It is chock full of premium-grade porn, so nobody's going to care about you two talking shit. Unless you market it in a way that suggests it isn't shit.
Tim, you're an internet genius. Okay, let's think of a brilliantissimo format, Ollie.
Well, I've always fancied being an agony aunt, but I do find after a minute or two of helping people with their problems, I tend to go on about my eccentric boarding school and various other humiliations that I've suffered.
I too enjoy feeding off of the suffering of others, but ultimately I think I prefer dictionaries to people.
I can tell this is going to be a cracking show. But answer me this, Helen. What could we call it?
Well,
if you've got a question, email your question to answer me this podcast at googlemail.com. Answer me this podcast at googlemail.com. Answer me this podcast at googlemail.com.
Matthew, who's next with a question?
Well, next up we have Jonathan Sinnott from Brighton, or is that in fact Leonard von Otterloo?
There was some confusion with who had actually submitted the ticket request.
Are you Jonathan Sinnott or Leonard von Otterloo?
Leonard, yeah.
You're Leonard.
Leonard. Hello, Leonard. Welcome to the show.
So is it the case, Leonard, that you don't actually know what Jonathan Sinnott had put in his question application?
I did. No. He's my boss, actually.
Ah. Well, you better do him justice or you're in trouble on Monday.
Yes, exactly. I'm really nervous now. Who invented the Scotch egg and why?
Who invented the Scotch egg and why? I was on holiday recently with my girlfriend. We went to Tucson.
And you invented the Scotch egg.
And I invented the Scotch egg.
Well done.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a strange place to do it, really. But I was going for a walk and I thought, there's nothing here to inspire me.
And I miss home.
What this place needs is pork and eggs. No, Helen. We went to a Mexican restaurant there, which claimed on the menu, and I believed it, that it had invented the chimichanga right there in that restaurant.
So the chimichanga was not invented in Mexico?
Correct, if you believe the menu. Which I do, because I learn everything from menus, everything I know. And it said that the chimichanga had been invented by someone taking a burrito and accidentally dropping it in the frying pan.
That's bollocks. That's clearly bollocks. Someone
Are you the
on
authority
purpose.
On chimichanga history?
Well, no, because it's a good idea, isn't it? You take something which is tasty, you fry it, it becomes more tasty. No one did it by accident.
So I reckon that's how the Scotch egg happened. I reckon someone was preparing some breaded pork, dropped an egg in it.
That was a very circuitous way to get that's... into how you thought the Scotch egg was invented.
All right, Helen. Well, I suppose you've got a better idea with your so-called truth.
It was invented in Fortnum and Mason's in 1738.
Oh, no,
that didn't take long.
Was it actually invented in the store?
Well, they could have been invented in their egg lab out the back. I wasn't there.
I bloody love a Scotch egg. And, like, if you've only ever had Scotch eggs from supermarkets...
Oh, here we go.
...which are just tennis balls with an egg inside, outside, like, make one at home. They're really delicious.
If you tried to play tennis with it, though, disaster.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
I was researching this question the other day, and I came across on the internet a Scotch ostrich egg, which is about this big. Oh. And the man had blogged how he'd made it, and at the end he had this, like... 10-inch thick egg, and he said, and I cut off a nice slice and watched Countryfile, and it was brilliant. Like, who on earth wants like an inch thick 10-inch disc of egg to eat? But apparently it might also be based on a Pakistani kebab which had like minced lamb stuck around an egg with spices. Sounds kind of nauseating.
That's a weird thing. Was it the British Empire then? Could they have been to Pakistan, seen that, and then brought it back to Fortnum and Mason as an egg?
I couldn't guess. I can't get into their minds.
Hello! Swain here! I'm really excited to have been let out on day of release, particularly for the Answer Me This 100th party! The last time I went to a party, I got myself in a pickle. I won't do that again with a bicycle pump and a rolled-up copy of Nuts magazine, I tell you. Anyway, I've learned my lesson now. Which is lucky for you. And you. And especially you.
Next up, we have Jason Graham from Essex. Jason!
Hold on, stop everything. Now, that's a very special noise that Martin just made, even though it sounds like four chords on a guitar.
Well, it's three chords, actually.
It's a very significant moment on an already significant episode.
Get your party whistles at the ready, everyone, because you are about to hear the 1,000th ever question on Answer Me This! Surely, Helen, this question from Jason Graham is going to be the most exciting, most iconic, most legendary, most informative, most enthralling question we've ever been asked on the show.
All right. What was the point of Walt Disney including an extra dog in 101 Dalmatians when surely 100 would have been an impressive enough amount of dogs to have a movie about?
Why did Walt Disney feel the need to add an extra Dalmatian? They didn't. Well, the 101 Dalmatians was the book.
Yeah, Dodie Smith felt the need. And Disney just thought, well, we'd better obey the book in almost every aspect, except we're going to adjust the puppy to adult dog ratio.
That's right, because they're very faithful to the books, aren't they, Disney? Well, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, obviously, and The Scouse Vultures in the Jungle Book, as written by Kipling. I suppose 100 is a bit obvious as well, isn't it? It's a bit neat.
Yeah, because everyone's thinking of 100 Dalmatians.
Yeah.
And they've done all the numbers up to 100.
I think she was going for a prime as well, wasn't she? She wanted to have a prime number.
It's a prime, it's a palindrome. Everyone likes prime numbers and palindromic numbers.
Beautiful symmetry.
And so is the 1,000th question a palindrome. Or the 1,000th and first question would be a palindrome.
Yes, you have correctly understood what a palindrome is the second time around.
Finally.
But I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
And
I get it now. Everyone would love things more if they were palindromes. 2001 should have been 2002, A Space Odyssey. Would have been better, right?
Would have been better. Yeah. Wouldn't have reflectional symmetry, but you can't have everything. When I was looking up this to see if there was any significance in this, which apparently there isn't, I found a lot of forums devoted to people saying Neo's apartment in The Matrix was number 101, which is 5 in binary, and it reflects 1984 by George Orwell.
Are you saying Dodie Smith read a lot of George Orwell?
Dodie Smith was a big fan of The Matrix. In 1956, she was very ahead of her time.
1,000th question, everyone. There we go.
Hello, I am a vagina. I'm over the moon to be here at your cervix. As the era of new labia draws to a close, the question on everybody's lips is, why can't we think outside the box? You tear us. Smeary boy.
Matthew, who's next with a question?
This is a guy whose name sounds like a pun but isn't a pun. Phil Pover from Norwich. It's Phil Pover here. After that, I've got no... sorry, is he literally not here? Phil Pover!
To be Phil Pover now, right, Matthew. Yeah.
You be right. Phil Pover.
Hello. I've been working at a new job. Actually, this isn't a good voice to do for this question. I remember what the question was.
Okay, get into character.
I'm not going to get into character for this because it'll come across as offensive.
Okay. We always avoid that.
Do one of your accents, Matthew.
One of my hilarious accents. Hey, how you... No, okay. I've been working at a new job for a few months now and usually let my new workmates know that I'm gay fairly soon into starting the job. You see why I didn't do a funny question?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Answer me this. Is asking a question on a comedy podcast the right way to come out to workmates?
Well,
I think we all know the answer to that already, don't we?
Yeah. This is more awkward now he's not here, isn't it? Yeah.
So, Phil, what job do you do?
Meat packing. Am I supposed to be doing a character here? Because this is...
Well, look, the thing is, it's better than being outed by the News of the World, isn't it? It's better than that. It's easier than ordering copies of Queer as Folk and Bette Midler T-shirts to come and be delivered at the office.
What do you think, audience? How are you split? Good thing? Give a yell? Bad thing.
Yeah.
It's a bad thing, Phil. Bad thing. Stay in that closet.
Stay in the closet. Tell anyone, live a lie. For God's sake, live a lie. Good. Well, what a wonderful liberal audience we have. How, anyway, would everyone at work know that Phil was gay just because it was on the podcast? He'd have to play it through the speakers like Tim Robbins in The Shawshank Redemption to get everyone know.
He could put it on his CV if he just wants to get rid of the problem from the start.
Yeah. Okay, good. There's a tip. Put it on your CV. Phil, gay.
And while they chatter fancifully, they're oblivious to my secrets. They'll never know what's going on inside my giant brain. And they are both arts graduates, so they wouldn't understand it anyway. So listen closely if you can, and I'll tell you the story of Martin the Sound Man. In my youth I was an explorer in Patagonia, and I discovered a very rare kind of bat. In my excitement I disturbed their habitats, and a multitude flocked out. I was bitten many times by their little furry snouts. I admit that I passed out, and when I came around, I had the most exquisite hearing in the world. I could hear molecules in the air bouncing off the walls. My gift for detecting hidden bombs, finding people trapped in rubble, diagnosing engine trouble. I even spent a summer doing cover for Bruce Wayne while he was on holiday, but that got to be a pain. And I found myself in Copenhagen 1926 through a series of events much too shameful to explain. I got bitten by a bunch of physicists, and when I woke I had a perfect grasp of physics in my brain. These endeavours left me strangely unsatisfied. My moon landing aside, it was time that I decide how to use my powers to serve the human race, to bring the masses bliss. And so came answer me this. These fools still think it's their idea, but I'm always near, guiding their careers. I don't need the glory, I care nothing for these matters. You'll hear the wisdom in my words when I say, you're a massive ball, perfectly smooth pubis, jeez, flappers.
Next with a question.
It's Lala Knott from London.
Helen Ollie, answer me this. If you could erase from the back catalogue one piece of personal information that you shared with your beloved listeners in the last 100 episodes, what would it be?
Yeah, what would it be, Ollie? Would it be the shitty socks, the posh wank? Would it be...
I'm just waiting for you to list my triumphs.
I just can't choose.
Well, people would obviously... this is probably targeted at me, Lala, I guess. You probably think I give a lot of personal information on the podcast. Is that fair?
Yes. Yes, probably.
Yeah. If you were us, what would you take back?
Probably quite a lot, but then it wouldn't be quite as funny.
You make a very good point. I think, you know, we edit the show, and everything that's in the show, actually, believe it or not, we have chosen. It's gone through a seal of approval. We said, yes, that's a good idea.
Somebody has no shame.
But actually, well, the hardest thing, actually, is my mother, everyone, likes to call me... My mother, everyone... she likes to call me after the show and deconstruct a lot of the performance that I've done, and I find that a bit awkward. There was one time, do you remember, Mum, when you called and said, that thing about me giving everyone glittery thongs at Christmas, I didn't know that embarrassed you. I didn't know you felt like that was a weirdly sexual thing to get from your mum. Do you remember that? Do you remember that conversation we had on the phone?
No, I'm happy my parents don't listen. Easier.
That kind of thing's more awkward than the actual episode is probably my answer. But, well, what about you? Do you regret anything, Helen?
Well, I give away less than you, and also I've had a less colourful life than you have had. Dull, some might say. I do regret about the first year's worth of episodes.
Yeah, that's true.
Wholesale.
But do buy our new albums on iTunes, everyone.
Help yourselves.
Smooth as silk.
What I would like to reverse a bit is that I often enjoy characterising my mother in a way that she's not really alike at all. So I'd just like to set the record straight and say that my mother's not cruel or loveless.
But let's relive some of those classic moments, shall we, Helen, where we've said foul things in a public forum. We have a montage of some memorable moments from the podcast.
An elephant's hymen must be thick and leathery.
Once I had such horribly splatting, runny, luminescent diarrhea that it actually bled yellow stains onto my socks.
If your relationship's that open, I'm going to stick my dick right in it.
Ginsters are horrible. You might as well just shit in a bath.
I remember watching Legally Blonde and thinking, if that were legally black, that would be quite racist.
If you can find a part of my body that doesn't have hair on, I'll give you a cake.
Penguins, penguins, get over it. Just let me live my life.
I was fist-fucked by the hand of fate.
If you say Candyman three times out loud, your balls turn to mush.
Ask me anything about East Grinstead. Is it near Gatwick Airport? Yes, it is.
Gary Bushell can blow me.
I'll skull-fuck him in the brain hole.
He doesn't say skull fuck him in the brain hole so much in real life. It's more a work thing.
Chocolate pudding smells nice, but I wouldn't want to rub it in my penis.
Don't be fooled by my golden squirrel. I'm just prayer from the Wirral.
How hard could it possibly be to give away free biscuits?
Doesn't Helen make hymen busting sound so delightful and wholesome?
I've got a tiny penis and a rack is going to pay.
If I were a dirty gold digger, I wouldn't have wasted 6 years pursuing Martin.
By the way, I just realised Adam Ant is a pun.
Charlie, you wang house.
I would be worried that whoever took down my last word would punctuate them wrong.
I don't like babies. Babies can fuck themselves.
Me, menstrual blood. Ollie, you appear to have caught the sun. And when I say caught the sun, I mean you've captured the sun, distilled it into a bottle and smeared it over most of your body.
Nothing about a bow tie makes me think of an open vagina, Helen. Nothing.
You two are a pair of fucking balls!
Well, that was a salutary lesson, wasn't it?
Yeah, how delightful we are. Wonderful.
Clean up language. Yes. No wonder Mother doesn't listen to the podcast.
Who's next, Matthew?
Next up, we have Alistair Little from London.
Answer me this.
Yes.
Why do vicars and priests, those suspicious fellows, have those odd dog collar things?
That was beautifully asked, I thought.
I really enjoyed it. It really felt like a lot of emotion behind it. He really got into his own character.
I've worn one of those dog collars before, not in the course of my ordinary life, or role play.
Bad Jew.
But it was for a school play, Helen, so that's okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
And it wasn't on a Friday night. And we were giving out flyers, you know, like you do for school plays, like in the town, giving out flyers. And everyone was really nice to me because I was dressed like a priest. I noticed.
Well, I'm not going to do 14-year-old priest.
It's a real status symbol. Like, everyone was treating me differently. That's why they wear them, I reckon. Yeah. So that's the thing. It's not because there's any... Is there any holy attachment to them?
No. It was a kind of pragmatic thing because it became kind of vogue in the Renaissance because Italian priests, which were the best kind at the time, were wearing these big, flouncy, lacy collars, and they didn't want them to get dirty because they didn't wash their clothes very often then, so they wore a little thin band of fabric around them, and their big, flouncy collars were outlawed, and they just kept the little thin band of fabric. There we go. And now...
Wait. The fabric got dirty. Why would that get dirtier than the rest of their shirts?
Neck sweat.
That's not a thing.
Have you never had a sweaty neck? Collars get grimy. Live with it.
Ow, yes, I remember the Blitz. Of course, during the war, you couldn't ask questions. Asking questions was rationed. So I remember you'd queue up all day. You could ask one question a week. And we'd get to the front of the queue and I'd say, is this the right place to ask a question? And they'd say, that's your question used up for the week. And you couldn't, if you wanted to ask another one, you had to have sex with the butcher. It was the only way.
Who's next, Matthew?
The next question is Ken. I think it's Ken McDonald from London.
Yo.
Good day.
Yo.
What up, Ken?
Can you do me to beatbox behind your question?
Oh, God, any encouragement. Seriously. I thought we'd left this behind in episode 40.
Answer me this. Was trepanation ever used as a form of exorcism?
Good. Trepanation ever used as a form of exorcism? I've never heard of trepanation. What is trepanation?
You had it done last week.
It's where you drill a hole in your skull.
Yeah, that was the day I spent all day watching Supermarket Sweep. I remember now, yeah. So, Ken, you've heard that it was used to, like, plunge demons from out of your body and that sort of thing.
Yes, I had.
Have you heard of that, Helen?
Yep. Everyone's heard of it but you.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, it was. But I think it was partly because it was used medically for a lot of things, many of which at the time were ascribed to demons rather than mental illness, epilepsy or infantile seizures. And it was also used for brain injuries. And they've been doing it, like, it's the oldest form of surgery, apparently. It's been, like... They've got skulls that are 6,500 years old that have been trepanned, and they live to tell the tale.
Just have little holes drilled in the back of their
big
head.
Big holes.
I suppose it's somewhere just to keep some flowers, isn't it, when you go shopping? Useful. Or a straw.
Baguettes.
Yeah.
All those prehistoric baguettes they used to enjoy.
Hello, London. Here's a little song I wrote in about 20 minutes when I was in a weird mood. But I woke up this morning and my pockets were full of stones and my head was full of questions. So I reached for my earphones and Ollie Mann, he spoke to me, but I didn't understand, 'cause my eyes were in my stomach and my face was full of sand. I'm standing in front of the word Lou and my past says I'm LaRue. Couldn't be here, she's got swine flu. She asked me for a kiss, and now I gave her it, but my face is turning orange. So Helen, answer me this. Can you think of a rhyme for orange? Half rhymes include syringe and lozenge. Thank you very much, you've been very kind.
This is our last question now, everyone.
But it's going to be a whopper.
Yeah. Matthew, who's it going to be? It feels like such a shame, but who's got a last question? Who's got the right to deliver that privilege?
Well, this guy, if he's got a great name. If he's not a Victorian gentleman, I'll be sorely disappointed. It's Edward Rivlin.
Edward Rivlin from London.
Edward Rivlin is here! Edward, with the appropriate gravity, please, for a question that's going to be the last one on our first and possibly last ever excursion into live podcasting.
I had hoped I'd got away with this.
We've all got away with it, Edward. It's just you.
Got away with it 100 times, man.
Can I just apologise for any offence beforehand? Helen and Ollie, answer me this. Why do women always tell me to go fuck myself? If I could do that, I wouldn't be sticking my hand up their skirts in the first place.
Oh... You know what? I think if we've achieved anything, it's that you felt shame, Edward.
That wasn't our intention, but what a happy byproduct of a comedy podcast.
And maybe one day in the future, Helen, we too will feel shame. It seems unlikely, doesn't it? We're getting ready for our big finale now.
How do you feel like this episode's gone, by the way, people? Have you had a nice time? Yeah. That's just the Haribo talking.
Listen... Thank you very, very, very much for coming. It really means a lot to us, and without sounding like a prick at the Brit Awards or something.
Not that you look like a prick.
Yeah, I'm halfway there. It's your questions that do genuinely make the show. That and us, obviously we're good too, but it's your questions. Thank you very, very much for those over the years, and it's been great, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Have a little moment. Come on. All right. Well, people have been wondering... the last 100 episodes, they've been...
Right.
They've been all right. Yeah, that's what they've been wondering.
What's going to happen?
They're not very eloquent, these people.
No.
But they've also been wondering...
How is this curve going to go?
What's
going to happen?
What's going to happen in the next?
Yeah.
In the next, say, 10,000 episodes. Seems realistic. Well, we've looked into the future, and we reckon that this might be... what the next 1,000 episodes of Answer Me This might sound like.
Why do kids always play loud music on the hover bus?
Why are house prices so high on Mars and Venus?
Did you hear that Miley Cyrus is getting divorced for the 19th time?
Why, when I take the budget teleporter, do I arrive covered in slime?
Questions from the future.
Granddad, what was it like? Answer me this 100 live.
How do the robot bees behave in the privacy of the hive?
What's the hardest question to answer in my Klingon GCSE?
How about schnaff, log, wibbit, jig, jog, snitch, snatch, koboshi? Questions from the future.
How did people indicate they'd made a joke before emoticons existed?
Did people live beyond 65 before suicide was assisted?
Should we grant asylum to refugees from war-torn Disneyland?
Is there anyone left alive on the planet not fathered by Russell Brand? Questions from the future. Do you remember ITV?
Do you miss pandas, tigers and cod?
Would you like some brie?
What does privacy mean?
Do we still need spleens?
Why do horses say meow?
What?
When?
Who?
Where?
Whither?
Wherefore?
Why so?
Eight?
Sorry?
And how?
Questions from the future.
Really?
Questions from the future.
Is it wrong to hope I'm dead by then?
Questions from the
future. Thank you very much for coming, and good evening.